you're going to be victimized in life, but you get to decide whether you identify as a victim. And once you, whatever you identify as, you will act in accordance with. So you have to be so fucking careful. Like what you repeat to yourself, just nice and simple, what you repeat to yourself that you are.
Is what you are.
Yeah, for sure.
I believe that each and every one of us has the power within ourselves to create the life that we really want. And I want to help give you the tools to make that happen. I'm Danica Patrick, and I'm pretty intense.
Today on the show, I'm talking to Tom Bilyeu, who started out with a job that he was not super inspired by and decided to leave. And the partner said, you can't go. You have to stay. What can we do with you? And he's like, I want to start a nutritional company. So he was one of the founders of Quest Nutrition, which of course made Quest Bar, which within 5 years turned into a billion-dollar company. He has since then resigned from there as well because he's inspired yet again to be an inspirational guru. He is a total entrepreneur. He has a show called Impact Theory, which I went on, which was a lot of fun. And truth be told, we're actually shooting a lot of episodes from his house. So he's also very, very kind. But he is just a really deep guy, a really introspective guy. And we covered a lot of bases that have to do with the mind and how you operate in the world and intention and being inspired. So I hope you really enjoy it.
So we have something in common. I love The Matrix.
And oh!
You love The Matrix, right?
I love The Matrix.
So tell me why you love The Matrix.
The Matrix is the perfect metaphor for the human experience. It is a movie entirely about belief. So the whole thing that Morpheus is trying to get Neo to understand is that he doesn't have to have anything special. He simply has to allow himself to believe that he exists in a system. That system has rules. Some of the rules have to be followed, but some of them can be broken. Mm-hmm. But before you can do any of that, you have to understand them. And so Neo goes on this journey not to do anything other than realize if he believes he can make the jump, he can make the jump. And that, to me, is life. I mean, we were talking about this before.
Right. So would that be him controlling 100% of himself or 50? Because you said, tell me your belief on that.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I want us to be completely blank slates. I don't want there to be any genetic component to our experience of life whatsoever. The bad news is, everything that science shows us is that isn't true. And I would say that in your own life, you can probably think of people who fall below what I call minimum requirements. And whether that's somebody who truly has some sort of intellectual deficiency and they're a special needs person,
sure.
Or you're around them and they don't have the emotional intelligence or whatever, and they're like full-blown spectrum, and they're really gonna struggle in life. And so we can understand how somebody in that sort of tragic situation through no fault of their own is always going to be a little bit behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that so life seems to be a spectrum, and the science is coming out right now will say that some percentage is determined by your genetics. Height, for instance, is an easy one for people to get behind. I could tell you to think all day.
Sure.
You're not going to get any taller.
That's true.
So it's like now it just becomes a question of what percentage is that that's sort of locked in stone. I'll ballpark it at 50%. Now, part of the reason I'm going to ballpark it at 50% is I get so excited about the other 50% because, like you, I believe that whatever amount it is that's changeable, it will alter your life in ways that are so profound you would be unrecognizable on the other side. So whether it's 90% that you can change, 10% that you can change, I don't care what the number is. I believe to the core of my being that the average person can transform their life so profoundly as to effectively make the following statement true. Anything is possible. So I live in a world
where...
You're
saying you don't need 100% then?
Definitively not.
To make great changes, you can do it with 10, 20, 30, 40.
And the easy example to give, since we've already got people to buy in, that height is not the the thing that is changeable, you've got a guy like Spud Webb, you've got a guy like Muggsy Bogues, Muggsy Bogues is the shortest person ever to play in the NBA, and he was 5'3". and he was extraordinary. And when you see him play against the Michael Jordan, you realize that what he learned to do was take advantage of how short he was.
Right.
So he could steal the ball away from them as they're dribbling it down because he's so close to the ball. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, people have to do like big dives to try and steal it if they're dribbling. They usually wait till they try and pass it. Mm. But it was very easy for him because he was just right there. So he, from a stats perspective, is one of the greatest point guards to ever play the game of basketball, and he was 5'3". So that to me is just like, he wanted it badly enough, and he grew up in the inner cities, and that gets into a whole thing. When he was asked, like, how'd you get so good? He was like, I was so desperate to get out of the inner cities, I just poured all my time and attention into this.
So how did your world, or what was your paradigm shift then, before watching The Matrix and after?
I really want The Matrix to have been like this demarcation line in my life. It sadly was not. But when I saw the movie, it was, to this day, the single most extraordinary film-going experience of my life. I'm going to be a little indulgent and tell a story.
Yeah, so that's what you're here for.
I'm obsessed with comic books. And I had just graduated film school. I felt like a total failure. And my friend, partly trying to cheer me up, was like, hey, come to this comic book convention with me. And it was held in the place where they hold the Academy Awards, believe it or not, at the time. And so I was like, oh my God, I have to do this. The Academy Awards, location, and comic books, perfect. I go there and I'm like looking around. This is back when comic book conventions were dicey at best. It felt like a garage sale. And I go around a corner of this like garage sale, and all of a sudden it's like a huge room, and up on the stage is Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, Joe Pantaleone.
Wow.
I don't remember if Lawrence Fishburne was there, but definitely Joel Silver and his son. And they were giving tickets away to the Matrix premiere that night on the back lot of Warner Brothers Studios. And so I was like, oh my God, like this is so incredible. So I take my ticket, I go to see the movie, and I was, as a film student, I was a psycho about movie theaters. I had to be quiet and want people talking. I sat in exactly the center. I used to measure it. I'd go 30 minutes early the whole night. And so if people talked or made noise, I'd have a fucking stroke. And I go in this theater, and the moment where the agent is talking to the cops right at the very beginning, and he said, you know, I think we can handle one little girl. And he goes, no, officer, your men are already dead. And then they cut to Trinity, and she jumps into the air and freezes. Myself and everyone in the audience just went, ah! Like, everyone screamed all at once. I had never experienced anything where I was like, God, I'm making noise in a movie theater. This is crazy. But I was so moved by how they were filming this thing. I knew I was going to be in from the jump. And then the movie just is this philosophical treatise by artists at the absolute height of their powers. And it literally is the perfect metaphor for the human existence.
I found it to be a fascinating movie from a lot of perspectives. And I feel like it's one of those movies where you see on social media, they're like, The Matrix was a documentary.
Yes, I have a shirt that says that.
Well, there's scientists that have said that they can break every element down out there into zeros and ones.
Mm. Yeah, that's where it gets crazy.
That's a little blow your mind.
Information theory is pretty freaky. And the odds that we're in a simulation are, it's almost certain.
So you're on the Elon Musk train.
I'm not.
With that.
I actually don't
think. But that's
think
what he said.
He's talking purely from an odds perspective. So I don't know that he either is saying that we actually are in a simulation. I don't know. I don't think he'll comment.
Saying the odds are.
Yeah. So statistically speaking, like, it actually does make sense. But someone also has to be the base reality. It's entirely possible that's us. To me, because it doesn't matter, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it.
That's true. I mean, I think that if we do, and my dad would tell me this too, you're worrying about stuff that you can't figure out. It's like, it's an interesting topic, though, and I think it opens your mind up to other things and really expands you and stretches you. And, you know, I read a book called The Holographic Universe, and that'll expand you and really open your mind up to possibilities. So while it's, you know, whether it's true or not true, it doesn't change our reality. What are you going to do, quit?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yeah. I read that you're one of those guys that takes the red pill. Is this accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, the bad news is, in internet parlance, taking the red pill now has been co-opted and means something else. Only thing I mean by taking the red pill
yeah,
is that I want
the truth. Yeah, go ahead and explain yourself.
So,
I'm 100% a truth seeker along with you. And so, what are some examples of times that you've taken the red pill? instead of the blue pill? And what has that done? Like, what paths has that led you down?
So the only way that I was able to get good at business, the truth will be psychologically damaging. I can pretty much guarantee you that.
Well, it's definitely going to probably, and it's probably going to create change. So
for sure. So and to that point, like those are the moments that were the biggest changes for me. So to get good at business, one of the realizations that I had to have that was really quite hard to swallow was I had been telling everybody for decades that I was going to be rich, and this is when I was dirt poor. And I finally meet these entrepreneurs, and they're basically showing me that the way that I'm living doesn't make any sense. And they're much smarter than me, and I'm really, really struggling to keep up, and it's making me feel badly about myself. And so one day I started arguing for this idea because it was mine. I didn't have the clarity of that at the time, but I'm arguing for an idea that I know is wrong, and there's a voice inside my head screaming, you know, if you can convince them to do this, it's worse for the business. And maybe because they just got tired of arguing, they finally gave in and said, fine, we'll do it your way. And so I had this emotional crisis, and I realized, do I actually want to be rich, or do I just want to feel good about myself? Because I fought for that idea because I wanted to win. And if I just want to be right and I just want to feel good about myself, then no judgment. And that's the one moment I'm like kind of proud of, because I didn't judge myself. I just said, look, if what you really want to do is feel good about yourself, go back to being the king of remedial jobs, which is how I used to refer to myself, and just feel good. Like, go where you're going to be the smartest person in the room. And on the other hand, if what you really want is to actually be rich, then you have to give up on feeling good about yourself, because these guys are the surest path to your success. And I thought, okay, neither of those are winning solutions. I need to feel good about myself, right? It was pretty clear to me that when somebody believes that they will never feel good about themselves again, they commit suicide. And it'd actually be pretty reasonable if it were true. The problem is it's a false belief. You can and will feel good about yourself again. But just in those moments, they feel so all-encompassing. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, I need to feel good about myself. But, and this, unfortunately, unlike the Matrix, which planted a seed that developed slowly over, you know, 10 or 15 years and finally becomes the dominant metaphor of my life, to sort of close the circle on what I was saying earlier, like that's how that one played out. This was a line in the sand, a moment of inspiration, a moment of clarity that my life can literally be before this red pill moment and after. And what I realized was, oh, I could build my self-esteem around something else. Because in building my self-esteem around being smart, being right, being good, being effective, all of those things were leading me down a dead end of arguing for bad ideas, because then I can be right and I can feel good about myself. But it would actually take me away from my goal. So I could become truly goal-oriented if I became a slave to the truth, if I always wanted to know, am I actually moving towards my goal or not? And the reason I said that the truth can be psychologically painful is because you're going to have to accept that it's all your fault. Now, when people hear that, they shut down emotionally. They can't handle it. They think I'm victim blaming or whatever. And all I'm saying is I'm not even interested in blame. Like that isn't why I use that. The word fault to me isn't about self-punishment. It's not about feeling bad. It's about recognizing that you're in control, that you can make a different decision and get a different outcome. So that's all I mean when I say it's all your fault. You're going to be victimized in life. And you probably can't control
by yourself or by others.
By others, by yourself too, for sure. Yeah. But that at least you can control. But you're going to be victimized by others. But you get to decide whether you identify as a victim. And once you, whatever you identify as, you will act in accordance with. So you have to be so fucking careful. Like what you repeat to yourself, just nice and simple, what you repeat to yourself that you are.
Is what you are.
Yeah, for sure.
So what are some instances that you took a leap, or you took a chance, or you made a big change?
So first of all, I think it's important for the audience to understand I'm not afraid of change.
Right.
I probably seek change. So when I left...
That's unique, to seek change?
That is very weird.
Do you have a pattern or a rhythm to your change? Like, is it every 2 years, every 5 years, every year, every month? Like, do you feel
it's really interesting. I've never thought about
this. Because I have a pattern. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, like every couple of years. I have an expression where every couple of years my life changes in ways that I would never expect, which is scary as hell, but it's also really exciting. As long as you're open and moving forward, it's exciting. But it does mean things are you're going to have to let go of things.
Yeah, as you were describing it, that's so intoxicating and exciting to me. Like every word out of your mouth, except the word scary, I was like, yeah. To give you an idea, in LA, I've lived in LA for 25 years. I've never been in one place for more than 6 years. And that was like unheard of for me. Normally it was 2 to 3 years and then I'm going to move.
Yeah.
Every 10 years, I intentionally completely reinvent my skill set. I'm haunted by a quote, which is genius is a young man's game. And when I heard that quote, it was tied to the statistics around Nobel Prizes. Oh. Nobel Prizes are given to people in their 60s for work they did in their 20s. Huh. And I thought, I can't be a part of that. So,
wow.
And this is one of the things you and I talked about on my podcast was like, I'm really obsessed with what are the values that people construct for themselves that they say this is important, which is all subjective. It's not going to be universal for everybody, but
sure.
Like they've decided this is important.
Sure.
And one thing I've decided is important for me is that my future is always bigger than my past. So no matter what I've accomplished.
You truly believe that.
1,000%. But I also approach the world in a way that could make that real. Now, I may fail, but I'm in sincere pursuit of something that is bigger than what I did in the past.
Yeah.
Now, whether I achieve it or not, to be honest, again, because of my value system is irrelevant, I don't value accomplishment. I value sincere pursuit. Now, to get that, you have to understand what I mean by sincere. Like, you've really got to fucking show up. Like, I'm trying to build the next Disney. Okay. Odds are I'm going to fail. But I go into it sincerely. And every time I catch myself where it's like, this is even remotely close to being just rhetoric and not actually how I'm acting and moving in the world, then I call bullshit and I immediately change my approach. I am sincerely pursuing building the next Disney every day. And that, like, I value myself for that. So going back to like, what are these, you know, big moments of change? So one, I had a teaching job that was very secure. I left to go work with entrepreneurs. I thought that would be really enlightening. And so that everyone thought it was crazy.
You left your job because you were...
Because I had heard something very potent and has continued to be a guiding light in my life, which is if you want to control the art, you have to control the resources. And so I thought, okay, if I want to, like, imagine as a race car driver, what if you never needed a sponsor? What if you had $10 billion in the bank and you were kicking off more in weekly interest than racing would cost you in a year? Mm. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, well, I don't have to do anything. I do this exactly the way that I want.
Yeah.
And so I had written a screenplay, got turned into a film. It was total garbage. I was absolutely heartbroken. And that saying just came back with full force. If you want to control the art, you have to control the resources. So I thought, okay, here I am, this guy trying to break into Hollywood. Here are these two successful entrepreneurs. They're telling me that they can teach me the principles of business, that I could get rich. Let's do that. So I go work with them. And then after 8.5 years of working with them, I completely burn out and chasing money. Even though it made me wealthy on paper, which is very different than bank account,
right.
But on paper, I was worth about $2 million. Okay. And I gave their equity back. I walked away from it all. I quit. I said, look, I can't keep doing this. Chasing money had left me emotionally bankrupt. Mm. So I was like, this isn't fun. I need to feel alive. And so I quit. That was another moment of huge change. Ironically, though, it didn't stick. And they were like, hey, we want to keep working with you. It's a whole nother story. And then we end up building Quest as a result of that, because that was the only way that I would continue to work with them, is if we were doing something we really believed in. And that ends up being Quest for three very different reasons. And then after about 7 years of Quest, I leave again and now exited that and started Impact Theory. And so Impact Theory itself, which I hope will be my forever company, but it will need to constantly be making dramatic progress. Otherwise, like, if I'm where I'm at now, 10 years from now, I'd be deeply dissatisfied.
So you said you were emotionally tapped from the job that was essentially making you wealthy on paper. Yeah. Talk about that. Like, what do you mean you were emotionally spent in that way?
You're going to dig this because you're way into energy.
Yeah.
All right. So
because I have a thought on that. I'd love to hear, like, why were you... Tell me about that emotion, because you were getting essentially something that you wanted.
Yes. And it didn't bring me what I actually needed. I mean, it's like a pop song in the making. I really, really, since the time I was a little kid, I've been telling people that I'm going to be rich. I'm going to be rich. And I just believed it, as they say in The Matrix, balls to bones. Mm. And I knew I would make that come true in my life. I didn't know how, but I knew that I was going to do it. And so I followed all the things You know, be careful where, what does your dad say? You look where your eyes
go. You go where your eyes go.
Yeah. So that, like, be very careful, because for me, it was always identified as rich. I'm going to get rich. It wasn't identified like I'm going to serve other people and generate wealth doing it. It was like, I'm going to get rich.
Sure.
And so that's all I thought about. Saw an opportunity to get rich in a software company, spent 8.5 years trying to build the software company. Mm-hmm. It was security software. So it wasn't something I was passionate about.
So you were bored.
I was bored. I was just trying to be a slick marketer. Mm-hmm. And know thyself, right? So I am big on connection. Mm-hmm. So I want to connect with people. I want to mm-hmm. feel like I matter. I want to know that mm-hmm. what I'm doing adds value to the world. I like community. Yeah. I'm the kid that at like age 5, I pretended not to see Easter eggs. So my sister, who was 9, could find them because I knew it meant more for her to win.
You?
I was five or six.
And your sister was 9.
And because I knew she really got off on winning. Whereas for me, I really got off on seeing her excited. So like my thing is and this goes back to predisposition, for whatever reason, I'm wired to really neurochemically enjoy being a part of a team and seeing other people succeed. Like, that's rad for me.
That's so fantastic that you can identify with that. I think that's a good lesson for people to identify what motivates them, what feels good.
Unfortunately, though, instead it took me doing really dumb shit to find out.
Well, you know, we all go through a learning process, and that's part of the journey, but to identify, you know, to be able to identify that for yourself through observation and honesty, instead of following the masses and society's acceptance for success.
Yeah, I really wish I'd come to it faster, but you're right. I'm grateful that I got there in mm-hmm. the end. So by the end of that time, I mm-hmm. felt dead. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just steering by
emotion. What did that mean? Describe that, because I'm going to guarantee there are people out there that are exactly that. They might be doing okay, but they're bored off their ass. They're not doing a job that's fun. They're totally uninspired. And let's face it, the work that you do affects your home too. So just like your home affects your work. So, you know, they both go hand in hand. So what was the consequence of being emotionally tapped?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. So my wife pulled me aside, and I thought getting rich would take 18 months. And so I kept telling my wife, like, just let me run hard for 18 months, 18 months, 18 months, 18 months. And so at 6.5 years, she pulled me aside.
Oh my gosh.
And she said, you're now damaging the marriage. And you're so focused and you work around the clock and it's always head down and sort of always beating yourself up because you're not, you know, where you want to be and it's taking too long that it's not fun anymore for her. And it's certainly not good, for the marriage. So I took that very seriously because my highest priority is my marriage.
Okay.
Over getting wealthy, even back then, the one wise thing I will say is that I've always gotten more out of my marriage than I've gotten out of anything else.
Good for you.
So
Were your parents good examples for that?
No. My parents were the example of exactly what not to do.
Okay, well, that happens, right? Your parents are smokers, so you're not, or you are too, you know, right?
Like, yes, and it's, I mean, that, you want to talk about a tangent, that would actually be quite interesting to go down for me anyway as therapy.
Dive.
At 14, my parents seemed happily married because I'm a kid and I don't know what unhappily married looks like. I just know my parents are together and so other parents are divorced and my parents are not. And
exactly.
So that must be happily married. But starting at about the age of, 12 to 14, somewhere around in there, I started having a recurring nightmare of being in a loveless marriage. And I could not understand. I was like, I've never dated anybody. So why is my nightmare being in a loveless marriage?
Wow.
And so that haunted me for years. And then 3 weeks after I went to college, my dad left.
Oh, wow.
So, and I actually, like, mad respect to dad, like, I wouldn't do the same courtesy to my children. If I were in a loveless marriage, I would get the fuck out.
Yeah, yeah.
But exactly. My dad stuck it out, didn't leave him. My sister left, literally waited until
I left. And do you know how there are so many people that do that? And, you know, I've had this conversation before with friends, like, you know, you stay for the kids, and it's like, you are showing your children that not being affectionate, that not being friendly, that walking past each other, or not operating in a loving way is normal. And your children are bound to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
So how the hell did you not repeat it then? You saw it, we had talked about this earlier, you go BMX racing and every time you BMX do the flip, you crash, so don't do that. So yeah. You obviously get messages through your dreams, which,
that's interesting.
You know,
I never thought of myself like that, but one thing I certainly did, that's
well,
for sure.
You know,
that is
and,
for sure.
And so your parents separate, and how did that number one, how it affect you, and then number two, how did you become the man you are today in a relationship?
Well, I think people have to have rules in life, so it starts with that, and it starts with you're going to think I'm being modest. I'm not. So follow me for a second, even though in the beginning you're going to think this is stupid. I'm just dumb enough that I have to like grope my way through things to figure them out, but I'm just smart enough to actually be able to do it. So when I'm looking at my life and I'm like, whoa, something really doesn't feel right, it's not usually immediately apparent why it doesn't feel right. And certainly when I was younger. And so I'm like, ooh, something isn't feeling good, but I'm gonna turn inward and I'm gonna try to figure out what it is. Now, when you turn inward, especially when I was young, I had, it's called the psychological immune system. Mm. And the psychological immune system, its job is to cut it short, is to keep you from committing suicide. So you fuck up, you do something really stupid, and mm-hmm. by all intents and purposes, your self-esteem should fall to nothing, but it won't. The psychological immune system kicks in and it tells you it wasn't your fault, it was stacked against you, it was their fault, the world did this, the world did that.
AKA coping mechanisms.
Correct. So you have all these coping mechanisms that kick in, and because I was so hell-bent to get rich, I had the moment of crisis I already walked you through where it forced my psychological immune system to come to grips with the truth. And in that moment, I said, okay, well, what do you really want? And it's okay. Whatever the answer is, it's okay. If it's petty, if it's ugly, if it's something you never want to admit to another person, it's okay. Like
Love
in
it.
My own mind, it was like, hey, this is a safe space to say what you actually want.
Yep.
And so in that moment of being able to say what I actually wanted, I realized what I actually wanted was to succeed. But the way I was going about success, what I was defining as success, was problematic. And the thing that I was building my self-esteem around was problematic. And I had the how did I become the man I am today? I had the realization that everything in your, what I will call your operating system is malleable. Your beliefs are mm-hmm. malleable. Mm-hmm. Your mm-hmm. values are malleable. Your identity is malleable. So people think, well, I grew up in a Christian household, therefore I have to have Christian values, or I grew up in a Muslim household, I have to have Muslim values, which is not true. Like, and that is but one random fucking fact, just to get people an understanding, because they'll get it, like, oh, I grew up in this religion or I didn't, and they see how it permeates their thinking. But there's 1,000 other things your thinking is permeated with by the country you grew up in, the state, the way your parents are, your zip code, like, it's the books you read. It's terrifying the way this stuff seeps in. Mm-hmm. Usually it happens by accident. People don't take control of their value system. Mm-hmm. They don't take control of their belief system. They mistake values and beliefs for truth. And they are not truth. It isn't objectively true that anything is possible. But I live as if it were. So that is a belief I have. I believe human potential is nearly limitless. Cool. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's so far. Maybe it's so crushingly limited. But I don't care. It doesn't help me to act like that. So anyway, cobbling all this stuff together is how I become the person I am today. Now, how did I become the way I am in relationships? This answer is at least funny. I read Cosmo magazine. So
it's starting out great.
I was absolutely terrified that I'd be bad at sex. So when I was a teenager, I had no game, none whatsoever. I did not know how to flirt with women. I actually did a Cyrano de Bergerac because my talent was always verbal. So I'll explain it. So all of us get early wins in something. So the more energy you put into it, you get an exaggerated response. I'm going to guess that's you with driving, which is why you and your sister did it at the same time. You got exaggerated response. You keep doing it. She stops. So for whatever reason, just verbally, I had to work my ass off at it. And I've never put more time and attention into anything in my life more than verbal. But I was always getting a disproportionate return on my energy. Mm. So in my teenage years, me and my best friend fell for the same girl. But I was so terrified to approach her, and he had all the confidence in the world, but he was terrible verbally. Oh. So I actually, and this comes from the play, Cyrano de Bergerac, where this guy with a really long nose helps this other guy woo the woman that he loves. So I'm in the bushes telling my friend what to say, and he's literally at her window wooing the girl that I am.
And that's you're just using that as a figurative example because that's what they did in the play, or that's literally what happened?
I'm literally in the bushes.
Oh my God.
And my friend is...
thought you were just describing the play.
We actually threw rocks at her window. No, the whole nine. And I thought, oh my God, this is so pathetic. I'm actually living out Cyrano de Bergerac.
That is the example of giving your letting your sister get the Easter egg,
too. That's part of the conflict, but this one really came from a place of emotional weakness. Mm. I was too afraid to be rejected. And so, again, how do I become this person? I'm willing to admit that that was emotional weakness. Mm-hmm. And my journey has been one of toughening up.
Emotionally.
So the thing I didn't know how to do in business, the thing that I finally had to learn in order to get good, is be tough.
Okay, so were you a pushover? Were you just sensitive? Were you easily offended? Tell me what it means to be. Tell me what it means to be. To need to work on the emotional side.
I was afraid of physical confrontation, which as a guy makes you afraid of verbal confrontation because with
physical
another,
with a girl or physical confrontation.
or like, definitely.
Are we talking about face-to-face sort of conversations and hiring and firing or?
Well, how does it play out in a civil context? It plays out in a civil context, yeah, that you're afraid of confrontation is the easiest way of any kind.
Okay.
Once you're afraid of confrontation, you're afraid of the truth. Once you're afraid of the truth, you can't be effective.
No wonder why I love truth, because I'm really good at confrontation.
That's amazing and more powerful maybe than you realize.
Yeah.
So because I was so fucking afraid of it, it really governed everything in my life. And so my life was about overcoming that.
Yeah.
And that was one of the biggest things I've had to learn.
Huh. So now back to leaving this miserable job that you were at, but you were being financially successful at, but not emotionally successful at. In fact, you were falling away to a place that was affecting your core values. You start making Quest bars in your kitchen with some friends.
Yes. So
like how did you decide all of a sudden, like, I'm going to make a fitness bar?
So it goes just like this. There were two things when I was a kid I promised myself that I would ultimately have, and that was that I would be wealthy and I would have six-pack abs. Hmm. And growing up a slightly chubby kid in a morbidly obese family.
You've been successful.
Thank you.
I mean, I haven't seen your abs, but you look fit. So.
Thank you. That was a real journey. Like that one wasn't easy. But
hang on for a second. Isn't the journey interesting? While you were successful, and maybe I don't know about the fitness part, like look at you now. Like it's far better, the bigger than what you could have ever imagined, probably, right? Like the journey is really interesting.
The journey is really interesting. You and I are lockstep on that. I've always been able to dream big as fuck. So
your rich was $2 million, and I'm going to bet you got more than that.
Yeah, that's... I don't know that I had a number, but once I was old enough to have a number, it was bigger than even now. My net worth on paper is more than that number, but my bank account isn't. But so the part...
It's actually a whole big lesson on assets being your wealth and bank accounts being high are not really true wealth.
Yeah, people really have to understand the difference between
when
you're if you're worth a lot on paper, like my net worth on paper is pretty terrifying. And my bank is ridiculous. Do not get me wrong.
Right.
I'm just saying there is a vast discrepancy. Like if you were to go online right now and search what's Tom Bilyeu's net worth, you'll get a roughly accurate number. But if it isn't the number that I'm getting paid interest on, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, that just gets into finance. People really need to understand that shit. And I didn't understand it for a very long time.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Quest Bar. Sorry.
Yes.
We
so
got off on a moment.
I go in and I'm unhappy and I quit and they were completely caught off guard. But these guys, the reason that I ended up with them is because they were yoked bodybuilders and very successful entrepreneurs. So they were the two things I wanted to be, fit and rich.
Okay,
and so I was like, I'm following these
guys. But you went in and you did the verbal confrontation. You know, you're good with words, but the emotion was there, so you left. Was that had you worked with that sort of side of you that was needing the work at that point in time? Were you finally arriving at a good place where you could say, I'm done and feel like...
I'm still not where I want to be, so it would be a lie to say that I felt like I was done, but I'd come so far by that point that it was...
Right, so
I was very effective at business by
then. Now it's time for the six-pack.
Yeah, well, so I'm already working on this. No, that's not quite true. So I quit at the 6.5 year mark, but we don't actually end up exiting the company until 8.5 years, roughly.
Okay.
So 6.5 year mark, I say, hey, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And they say, what would it take for us to keep working together? And I outline vagaries. I say, it needs to be something we're passionate about. It needs to be something that adds value to people. It needs to be community-based. It needs to be our real personalities. Like, all the things that I was meant, because I'd already quit. I'd done the hard thing. So I was like,
hang on, but you're going to keep working with these people?
But this was, they were asking that when I had already quit.
Oh.
So now they're trying to get me back.
And back saying, in that job or back in any job?
Back to work together. So they're like, when I quit, they were like, okay, God, wow, fuck. I didn't see that coming. Bye. Thank you. And I leave.
Okay.
And I'm going home and the weight of the world has been lifted off my shoulders because they were like my brothers. So I was like, I felt like I was leaving them high and dry. But I was, but I felt free for the first time in a very long time. And so driving home, I am pulling into my driveway and my phone rings and I'm on the phone with my wife. I did it because we were going to move to Greece. We're moving to Greece.
Oh my gosh.
Like, here we go. This
you
is
really
amazing.
Aren't afraid of change.
Not in the slightest. So we were going to bone out and I'm pulling into the driveway and I say, babe, it's them calling. Let me take this out of respect. So I click over and they say, we could do this without you. But we don't want to. Mm. So come out to dinner with us. And so I go out to dinner and they were like, look, you totally caught us by surprise. Mm. We didn't know what to say. We've had time to think about it and we don't want to do this without you. So what would it take for us to work together? And so I was like,
meaning like, we don't want you to go away. We love you. We want to work with you. What capacity are you willing to work with us?
Correct.
Okay.
And so then I broke it down and I said, you know, this is what it would have to look like. And it was, the things that I just outlined. And they were like, actually, we've been unhappy for a long time as well. Let's set a goal, metrics. And if we don't hit the metrics, we'll sell the company and we'll start something new. And so at the time, we didn't know what we were going to start.
Okay.
And so then you start looking at the assets. You've got me, I'm obsessed with community. I'm obsessed with filmmaking, all that. And you've got my partner who the punchline will end up being that he's really good at operations. And that becomes very necessary in the business we decided to start. And then my other partner who was just obsessed with nutrition. I mean, the guy was obsessed. And so we're at a technology
company. I'd be that friend.
Oh, it was awesome. So he would come in and talk about nutrition all the time. And so we were all like, all the people that complain that there's too much noise out in the world of fitness and who do you listen to? We were all just like, we listen to him.
Yeah.
And so he was yoked, fucking ripped.
Whatever
strong.
He's doing is working.
Yeah. We're like, fuck, you tell us what to do and we'll do it.
Yeah.
And so he would tell people, most people wouldn't do it, but I actually would. And I followed through
and it worked.
Completely changed my physique, added muscle, got lean. Like, it was incredible. And all that time, now we're like, well, what's our next business? We're like, well, the thing that we talk about when we're in neutral, we're not trying to get rich or whatever, is always nutrition.
Okay.
And so then I'm like, well, what would be my hook into that? I love it personally, but not enough to show up and fight every day. But my mom and my sister are morbidly obese. Mm. Now that I can get behind. I can show up and fight for my family. Mm. So then I just started investing, right? Taking my value system and saying, okay, I'm going to end metabolic disease and I'm going to help my mom and my sister. And there's a great Mother Teresa quote. She says, nobody will act for the many, but people will act for the one. So I'm like, I'm just going to show up and fight for those two. I'm going to think about them. It's easy to picture. It's easy to imagine. I know I'm going to lose them too soon because they're not making the right food choices and it's going to kill them. So if we can make food that they choose based on taste and it happens to be good for them, then we've got something. And my other two partners were doing it for very different reasons. They, as much as they cared about my mom and my sister, they weren't showing up every day and fighting for them, nor would I expect them to.
Right.
So we each had our own reason to want to be there, but if you align selfish desires, you can do some pretty extraordinary things. And since I was in charge of marketing, I could just tell my story and be like, look, here was my own weight loss journey, and I come from this morbidly obese family, and I want to help them, and I am not stupid. I know that there are hundreds of millions, maybe a billion or more people that struggle with food exactly the way that they do. And so that became the guiding light of the company, was to end metabolic disease.
Well, belief is a powerful thing, as we talked about. But then I think the next most powerful thing is have to do something. There's a difference, like when you have to. So I'm going to bet that you probably fell into that sort of role of feeling like you had to do something, right? And you were looking for something. Anyway, it fit the, like, you know, it became a very motivating, like, I want to help save their life. Like, this needs to be done. Okay, so what were the, I mean, like, you started in a kitchen, then there was... You bought the equipment for producing the product because you didn't want to have to do it. And then somebody else said they couldn't do it. And sure enough, you tried it and it the equipment didn't work. And then someone rebuilt it. Who the hell was the mechanic?
Yeah, so that's a fun story. So like you said, we started making them by hand to prove the market. So we were already selling them, just making them in a kitchen we were renting by the hour. Just never planning long term to do it ourselves, but we needed to see if there was a market worth investing. So we see there is. We go to contract manufacturers. We say, here's our recipe. And they all say, this cannot be made. And we didn't believe them. Anything is possible. Hey, we'll do this ourselves. It's probably better anyway. I remember my partner coming in and saying, we're going to be our own manufacturers. And me and my other partner were like, you're out of your fucking mind. Why would we ever do that? And that ended up being really, really an important inflection point for us, because now we could figure out how to make the bar. And what we realized was, people had probably had a recipe like ours for a long time, one that doesn't use sugar and that tastes like it does. But every time they went to a contract manufacturer and they said, this can't be made, then they just stopped or they changed their recipe.
Sure.
And what we did instead was design our own equipment. So we bought equipment that was used for traditional protein bars. And what we realized was high fructose corn syrup has very specific properties in terms of texture and the way that it runs through the machine. We've been using high fructose corn syrup for like 70 years. The equipment is all grown up in lockstep with the use of high fructose corn syrup. So it's literally designed to take certain textures. We didn't think about how sort of in lockstep they would be. And as soon as you take that ingredient out and put in another one, even if it's another liquid, once it's a liquid fiber, which is what we were using, it just doesn't react the same. So the machine would lock up.
Oh boy.
So we're like, all right, we have to fix this stuff. One of my partners was quite literally an Iowa farm boy. And I remember one day he's looking at the equipment and we're all like, fuck, this isn't working. Like it's a disaster. Everything's all over the place.
Kick it, it might.
Yeah. And Mike looked at it and he goes, I think I know how to fix this. And we're all like, what? And so he was like, but if I do it, there's no going back. We won't be able to resell the equipment. And so having a very high tolerance for risk, we're like, yeah, we're dead in the water now. You might as well at least try it. And so with a Sawzall and a blowtorch, cut it apart put it back together, and it worked. And we were like, dude.
Did you guys watch the money just going into the shredder as he got the Sawzall out and he just started hacking away? Because that's not even very accurate, a Sawzall. They use Sawzalls at the racetrack. When you get into an accident, you have to cut body work off. Yeah. Sawzall, baby.
Yeah. And I took pictures of it because I'm like, no one's ever going to believe this. Like, it was just that do or die shit. Like, there is a very fun period in an entrepreneur's life where it's just all do or die. And if you have a sense of fun about it, like, I've always believed in myself. And my wife, and that like you very graciously talked about earlier, I will give the same caveat. That doesn't mean that I don't doubt myself routinely. Yeah. It just means that I also believe in myself routinely. Yeah. So I was like, if this doesn't work out and it tanks, because we all put our houses up. It's like, okay, we lose a house and stuff. As long as I don't have brain damage and nothing happens to my wife, I can always rebuild. Those two things I legitimately have fear of. So brain damage scares me just like to my knees, because then there's just nothing.
Without your health, you have nothing.
Correct.
You're locked to a bed.
And most things you can fight back from, but brain injury.
Yeah. So this confidence is something I want to talk about, because I think that it's not the most common thing, but you have, I want to make sure I wrote it down because it was important. If you can out-execute me, then you deserve the success, not me. And I think that is a really freaking confident statement, because, and you also had mentioned something about also being willing to share information and secrets, and like, it's basically, you're saying mano a mano. Where the hell did you get that confidence to be willing to give other people, you know, all the tools and say, let's go?
You ready for the real secret?
Yeah.
That's not actually what I'm doing. So what I'm really doing is going, some people are going to think this is mano a mano and they're going to take it and try to outperform me. And on a long enough time, my one piece of arrogance is on a long enough timeline, no one is willing to do what I'm willing to do. They will fall off. And life has just taught me that is the fucking gospel truth.
We talked about that. The try harder one more time. Yeah. They keep going one more time. And they keep going one more time. And they just keep dropping off until you're the last man standing or woman, whatever it is.
1,000%. And that's why when you said that, I was like, that's intoxicating to me. Mm-hmm. That is the very thing that my success is predicated on. Mm-hmm. Is I'm relentless. Mm-hmm. Like, let the full weight of that word wash over you. I am relentless. Mm-hmm. I will not stop. I'm like the fucking Terminator. So
where'd you get that from?
The movie.
No, where'd you get the confidence from?
Oh, that, well, here is...
Was there someone in your family that way?
No.
Did you, were you using neuroplasticity to train your brain?
This is the breakthrough moment for everybody. You need to have a rule in your life that says exactly the following. I only do and believe that which moves me towards my goals. So, if thinking that you're too stupid to do it moves you towards your goals, then think you're stupid. But something tells me that's probably not what's going to take you towards your goal.
Right.
The thing that's going to take you towards your goal is to believe that you can figure it out. So I adopted the belief system of the learner. Now, then in terms of like values and stuff, my identity and my value system is such that I need to be able to endure more suffering than the next person. So you put them together. I believe I can learn anything. My very identity and ego is tied up in the willingness to learn, not to be smart, to learn, to fall on my face and get back up, and I'm not going to let somebody out suffer me. Cool. You put those two together. You have a dangerous cocktail, by the way. You get a guy that goes 6.5 years down a path that's making him profoundly unhappy. So that is a very real, if you don't have all the other mechanisms, because my belief system has 25 points, you can download my belief system. I literally make it available. To get back to the original point, some people will take it as mano y mano. I know I will beat them on a long enough timeline. And then the other people are all going to want to help. And they're going to, in some way, shape, or form, help me sharpen my thinking, assist me right at a moment when I need it. Mm. I'm just a huge believer in tell people what you're up to, because you never know who might want to help or who might be able to help. Mm. Like, you could be standing next to somebody who, in my world, let's say, is a film producer, and they're desperately looking for, let's say they have a philosophy, I don't bet on stories, I bet on people. Okay, well, cool. If I'm standing next to that guy and he knows what I'm trying to accomplish, chances are he's going to at least let me sit down with him. Now, we all have a superpower that we have cultivated. Mine is, if you get me in the room, I will make people believe. But you have to get me in the room. And I have to believe in it. But if I believe in it, oh, my friend, I can draw people into my universe.
Belief is super powerful.
For sure. But if I don't tell people what I'm up to, they're never going to know. So it isn't about me saying, hey, here's everything that I'm doing so that we can go against each other. It's here's everything that I'm doing and I hope you can help.
Well, you know, that kind of leads me to this. You'd mentioned it a little bit at the beginning, but about like victim mentality of like, you know, people just like, if they can just believe in something and have authentic goals that mean something to them, whether, you know, changing their mission, like, why wouldn't everyone do that? And I just think that you're a great example of grabbing a hold of what it is that you're good at and making that into something great, you know, because not everyone has to be an owner or the leader. You know, some people need help and you couldn't do it without them. So what do we do to get people to take ownership for their life?
Get them into Impact Theory University. And I say that not as a plug. I say that is,
well, 'cause you believe
I designed the course for that reason. This is a very learnable thing.
Yeah.
And I know because I did it. I didn't start out there. I started out as an absolute fucking basket case. And I slowly but surely cobbled all this stuff together out of desperation, out of a desire not to slide into depression, after meeting extraordinary people, reading extraordinary books. I mean, basically, I've just cobbled together all this stuff. It's probably 80% from encountering other people and ideas and 20% just trying to synthesize all that and then the way that it bounces around uniquely in my particular mind. But it is learnable. Once you learn it, it will change your life so profoundly as you will be unrecognizable.
Okay, well, give me a couple of points of if I was going to university.
Yep.
Tell me a couple things that I'd learn. Let's get people excited about it so they do it too, because I believe in the collective. Mm. If we can all just be going in a right direction, a higher frequency direction or whatever that is, I want everyone to do that and the world will be a better place. And let's stop playing the blame game. So, and let's all get along. So if I'm going to university, hook me.
So one of the things you're going to learn is something you just talked about, which is extreme ownership, why most people can't take extreme ownership, what it actually means, how to implement it in your life. You're going to learn about neuroplasticity, why brain plasticity matters, how to take advantage of it, how to create empowering habits, the exact beliefs that you should have in order, the books you should read in order. You're going to get the values, what I call the ultimate value stack. Depending on what you want, the value stack is going to change. But my thing is, I want this to be tactical. So I'm not going to say things like, you need values. I'm going to say, you need values. And for this thing that we're talking about today, this is the ultimate value stack. You need to have this as a value, whether it's a willingness to suffer more than the next person, that I do hard things every day. Like, we're going to break those down. And then I'm going to give you what those things are. What are hard things that you should be doing every day, depending on where you're trying to go? Like, what are things that would really work for you? What I want Impact Theory University to be is an instruction manual for exactly how to live. And to accomplish. So we have two tracks. There's the personal, which is all mindset, but taking mindset out of the ether and making it ultra tactical. Do this.
Love it.
Think like this.
Calls
believe
to action.
This, say
Let's
this.
Actually freaking accomplish something.
Definitively.
Yep.
And then business, where it'll be just straight up. This is how you fucking build a business. So roll your sleeves up and let's go, because we're going to get real specific.
Yeah. Well, you like to read, right?
Obsessively.
Yes. So you said read these books in order. So let's finish off. Give us a book to read.
Number one is mindset. There's nothing else. Don't read anything other than Mindset by Carol Dweck. That is the most important
Mindset
book.
By Carol Dweck, writing
Mindset
that down.
By Carol Dweck. It's the most important book in the English language. I'm writing my own book right now, and I can just tell you, you still need to read Carol Dweck's book first.
That's awesome.
Like, it is so powerful. It is the framework upon which everything else rests, because it's the most sort of base level fundamental shift you're going to make in your mind. And until you make that shift, you're not ready for everything that comes after it. And that's that book is all about the difference between a fixed mindset, where you believe your talent and intelligence are fixed traits. They're genetically determined. That's it. It's not 50% changeable. It's 100% unchangeable. A growth mindset is where, sure, maybe some of that is fixed, but you can actually change your talent and intelligence, which is the one people normally get hung up on.
Yeah.
So if you believe that they are malleable traits, you now have what I call the only belief that matters.
Yeah.
Now, why is it the only belief that matters? Because if you believe your talent or your, excuse me, your energies will be rewarded with an increase in your talents, then you'll actually put the energy and the time into making the change. If, however, you believe, no matter how much time and energy I put into this, I'm never going to improve because you can't teach an old dog new tricks, then you won't put the energy in, and you'll never see that right on the other side of a little bit of effort is this insane gold mine. So
the only way to the other side is through.
Correct.
The only way to the other side is through. Stretch yourself.
I'm with you.
All right, cool. Thanks, Tom. We got to wrap up. I wish we could do this longer.
Absolutely.
But
thanks for having me on.
Wonderful guest. So smart. I think we're going to have to do part two.
I'm down anytime.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Pretty Intense podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. And also, thank you so much, Trevor Hall, for the awesome music. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more, please click on the subscribe button.